Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck, and I am the host of the show. My guest this evening is Michael Gelb, author of the newly released book, Brain Power. The focus of this book is how the brain gets more flexible, has better memory, and can outdo a brain one half of its age. But we need to learn to take care of it. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Hello, Michael.
Hi. Good evening.
How are you?
Fabulous. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
I just loved your book. And synchronistically,
thanks.
When Borders was going out of business, I picked up How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci just because I've always loved Leonardo da Vinci, and so I have the book, and I plan to read that next.
Wonderful.
So how did you become so interested in the brain and what your brain research and Leonardo da Vinci? How did that all begin?
Gosh, well, Leonardo da Vinci was one of my childhood heroes, along with Superman. And I remember when I discovered that Superman was only a comic book character, but Leonardo da Vinci was real. And the more I learned about him, the more amazing he became. I was always fascinated by human potential and how to fully express it. And Leonardo seemed to be the ultimate role model for the expression of our full human potential.
Right.
So I went to Clark University in Worcester, Massachusetts, because it's the place where Freud and Jung first came when they came to the United States. And I was hoping to get an understanding of the mind through academic study. And I learned a lot of valuable information, but I was really looking for applied psychology. I was looking at how one could actually integrate this understanding of how to improve the mind and creativity. So that led me on a quest to meet all sorts of fascinating, wonderful, interesting people, and I integrated what I learned into my own approach to developing creative thinking ability. And then, as the years went by, I was invited to teach seminars all over the world, oftentimes for corporations, and I would use Leonardo da Vinci as an example and refer to him and quotes from his notebooks and so on. And then in the early 90s, I was speaking to this business group that holds these fantastic events all over the world. And I knew they were holding one of their premier events in Florence, which is one of my favorite places.
Yes.
Right? And I really wanted to get invited. So it was kind of funny. The head of the education committee for the Florence event approached me after a talk I gave to this a group of business people in Washington, D.C., and he said, if we were to invite you to Florence, what would you do? He said, we'd want something really special. So I looked him right in the eye, and I said, how about How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci?
Oh my gosh. That is so cool.
Isn't that wild?
It just came through like a flash. Because you,
exactly,
because Leonardo,
yeah.
Because Leonardo da Vinci was communicating with you.
Well, I'll tell you. Do you know Jean Houston?
Yeah, I mean, I do.
Right.
Not personally,
Jean,
but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I've known Jean for many, many years. I first met her way back in the early 80s when there was a group called Quest, and Quest sponsored my seminars all over the U.S., and they also sponsored Jean's seminars. So I was lucky enough to meet Jean way back then, and the years went by, and I had this inspiration about Leonardo, and I immersed myself. I went to his birthplace. I went to the place he died. I walked his footsteps. I read his notebooks. I started dreaming about him. And, you know, the seven principles emerged from all that. So I eventually translated them into the book, How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci, which came out in 1998. So in early 1999, I was invited to speak to this group of psychologists in Washington, D.C., and there were two keynote speakers, Jean Houston and yours truly. So How to Think Like Leonardo had been released, it had been out for a few months at that point. And I hadn't seen Jean for many, many years, and she kind of sidled up behind me, and she whispered in my ear, she said, "Leonardo is very pleased with you."
Well, I totally agree with that.
Oh, gosh.
Well, maybe you met him in another life. Not to be too esoteric here, but that's what I think, karmically.
Well, let's put it this way. I have a sense, I have an extraordinary sense of resonance and connection with the maestro, and the great thing is, you know, people are so awed by Leonardo's incredible genius, and it's easy to be awed because, you know, here's the guy who, besides painting the Mona Lisa and the Last Supper, invented the parachute before anybody could fly. I mean, it's a stunning level of unbelievable genius. But the really, really cool thing for those of us who are interested in personal development, in growth, in fulfillment, in creativity, is that Leonardo gave very specific, detailed, clear, and actionable advice on how you can develop your own human potential. So what I did, I read his notebooks, and I looked for, when does he give advice? How can I translate it into contemporary terms? That's you know, behind the whole How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci phenomenon.
Yes. How many notebooks did he write?
Oh, well, we have about 7,000 pages of Leonardo's notebooks, but most of the da Vinci scholars estimate that that's only about half, and that the other 6,000 or 7,000 pages have been destroyed or lost.
Maybe not.
Well, maybe not. That's the great thing, is they keep, you know, they just found this Leonardo painting a few months ago, and it's just been the art historians have just started to come to agreement that, yes, this is actually by the hand of Leonardo. It's called the Salvador Mundi, the Savior of the World. It's a Da Vinci portrait of Christ. I actually sent it out as my Christmas card.
So neat. Did you ever hear the story, and I'm sure you have, that the Last Supper, he found a study for Judas at the end. He couldn't find a study for Judas for many years, and it turned out that the study for Judas, as he appeared in the Last Supper, turned out to be Jesus years before.
Yeah, that's apocryphal. I'll tell you more likely a story of who the image of Judas is. It's the prior of the Church of Santa Maria delle Grazie. Because Leonardo was working on the Last Supper 14 hours a day up on the scaffold with total concentration and devotion. But after 5 or 6 days, he would take 2 or 3 days off. And the prior of the church, who was supervising this painting, got really upset because he didn't know this was a transcendent genius for all of human history. As far as he was concerned, this is another contractor. and you know what they're like. You know, he says, I got Giuseppe, my plumber. I got Vito, the painter. Vito, the carpenter. Leo, the painter. I can't get good help.
Yeah.
So, you know, he complained to Leonardo, and Leonardo told him to get lost. So the prior went to the Duke of Milan, who actually arranged the contract for that painting. And the Duke summoned Leonardo and asked him to explain himself. And mm-hmm. Leonardo is very famously alleged to have said, men of genius sometimes work best when they work least. And he explained to the Duke that he needed time to incubate, that after working with great intensity, he needed time to be receptive, which is one of truths of all. It's just part of the creative process.
Absolutely.
And Leonardo is very good at articulating it. But then he went on to explain to the Duke, he said, look, I am trying to find a face to use as the face, as a model for the face of Christ. He says, I despair of finding a face so sublime. And we know he left that face unfinished. But then he said, I'm also having trouble finding a face for Judas. He said, how can I find a face so hideous as to be the face of the one who betrayed our Lord? He said, but if all else fails, I can always use the face of the prior.
And that's what he did? Is that it?
Well,
we don't really know for sure.
There are lots of stories.
My gosh, I wonder where the legend occurred with Judas as being Christ years before, but the model, you know, the model. That is fascinating.
Yeah, well, no, but if you look at the face of Judas in the Last Supper, it really, you can't in any way compare it to the face of Christ who you see in the center of that painting. They don't look anything alike.
I understand, yes.
Yeah.
Well, you will really appreciate the fact that when I was 12, I spontaneously started my first journal, and I addressed each segment, you know, each page, like, Dear Leonardo da Vinci, but it was Dear Leonardo, and then I would write a journal page. And I did
that
every day for a long time. And then every now and then I'd switch off to Michelangelo, and I loved Vincent van Gogh, so I would do the three of them as the spirit moved me. And I just thought you would appreciate that.
I do appreciate it. I think it's fantastic. I think it's probably why we're speaking right now.
No doubt about that. Well, as I was reading Brain Power, I was struck. It just struck me. I'm switching gears a little bit. The ageism in our society is so profoundly deep that no matter where you go, or you listen to conversations at a restaurant, or you listen to the people who talk at work, or, you know, the general exchanges that you hear in the marketplace, as it were, and people are constantly saying stupid things about how they're aging, how, oh, my God, I had a senior moment. There's a good one. and you know, it just isn't true, but I think the beliefs that we have so deeply penetrate in our society are really, really not serving anybody, and the worship of the youth is not serving anybody. I mean, as you have pointed out in your beautiful book, you know, the idea that we in other cultures there's so much more understanding and appreciation and respect for older folks. What do you think about that?
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's to me, that is why I'm so passionate about the message of this book and why it's so profoundly needed. Because even though people may be kind of tangentially familiar with the idea of neuroplasticity and, you know, the idea that, well, if you do some crossword puzzles or something, maybe you won't be completely hopeless. It tends to be framed in a massively negative mindset, which is constantly reinforced by the media in a way, you know, if the kind of discrimination, the kind of insults that are levied every day towards older people were levied towards any other minority, there would be wild uproar and outrage.
Yes.
It really is. And what's, you know,
wow, that's so
what's
true.
Really absurd, right? What's really absurd about it is, whoever you are only harming yourself when you denigrate aging or older people, because you are programming your own mind in that moment to have that outcome.
Absolutely.
And,
no doubt about
right?
it. None. No doubt.
And you know what's fascinating is there have been studies done on this. So it's not just detrimental to older people when younger people take on this negative attitude about aging.
Mm-hmm.
It interferes with their ability to age gracefully and intelligently, which there's an adjunct to this too, which is, please let's just drop the whole notion of anti-aging.
Mm-hmm.
It's just rubbish.
Yeah,
that's like saying, I'm anti-gravity. I'm against gravity. I don't believe in it. I'm going to try to counter the effects of gravity. No, you have to harmonize with gravity. It's not going away. It's part of our current reality.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with aging. So
sure.
Anti-aging is like saying, be anti my existence, because we're all aging right now, even as we, you know, have this delightful conversation. So the question then is, how do I embrace a graceful, intelligent, creative approach to aging? Because I'll tell you what, you know, there are genuine challenges, very serious challenges that emerge as the decades roll on. Let's not be naive or Pollyannish. You know, I'm
mm-hmm.
about to turn 60. 2 years ago,
yeah. mm-hmm.
I had a hip replacement.
Right.
Eight weeks ago, I had a knee replacement. You know why? Because my hip wore out with use. And then my knee wore out. You know, I saw the x-rays, and my both of those joints before the surgery, they were in pieces. I mean, they were completely worn out. There was no question I needed a new hip and a new knee. Thank God
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I was able to get them. But
right.
here is the really, really good news. Although much of our body is designed to wear out over the years, the brain is not one of the parts that wears out. It gets better as you use it.
Yes, that's the point, as you use it. Now, it's not a guarantee that it's going to get better just because you do nothing or don't think or don't read or don't, you know, exchange with people. And I think that it's very interesting that from what I could glean from your book about the brain, that we are all, not we, but so many people are really stuck in the 1950s research about the brain, that it doesn't regenerate, that it shrinks, and that if a cell dies, nothing comes back to replace it. And people are, I mean it, they are stuck into that research. And
you're so right on. I mean, that's why this book, I think, is just so important, not just for individuals, but
mm-hmm.
societally, because the paradigm has shifted. Science, the scientific consensus, you're absolutely right, in the 50s, it was the brain degenerates, it's fixed at age 5, after age 30, it's a guaranteed slow process of inevitable decline. That was the scientific understanding when most of us were growing up. And
mm-hmm.
that has been utterly overturned. Now the,
right.
There's no significant debate. I talked to a lot of neuroscientists in the research for this book. There was nobody who was debating whether or not the brain could improve. There was a
mm-hmm.
consensus. It's designed to improve with use. The only real question is, what are the best ways to use it? And that's the through line of this book is, okay, what can the average person do? What kind of things can the average person do to improve their mind as they age? What are the things you can really do? Taking all the research, what's really research validated that's actually doable by an average person to optimize your chance of improving your mind as you age? And people say to me, well, you know, I know somebody and they their grandfather died of Alzheimer's and their father died of Alzheimer's, and, you know, so it's a fait accompli. Well, believe me, there are realities of genetic inheritance, there's no question about it, and predispositions and proclivities to various problems. So if that's issue,
but the point is,
this stuff
if you say
is more important.
Yeah. But
it's,
if I say
it's even
to myself,
more important. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I'm just gonna say, if I say to myself that, well, my dad died of Alzheimer's, so I'm gonna die of it too, hell, that's gonna happen. And my father did die of Alzheimer's, and not once in my whole life have I thought that I would die of it too. Ever.
Amen.
Yes. So I
You're
right. Everything you're saying is belief, and people are programming themselves. And I work with women who are in their 30s and their 20s, and they all think they're old. It's ridiculous. You got to love them totally. And I always, I mean, because they know I just turned 60 last year, and they all know I did, and they all know that a bunch of us got together and got into a hot tub and had a wonderful time in the freezing cold, and we just had an uproarious time. They know that, and they know that they have to loosen up. And I think I'm a pretty good example of that. But it's amazing because young people are just stuck in thinking they're old. And to make it worse, Brian Williams on the Nightly News the other night said that the brain starts to deteriorate at age 27, and you might as well just call it quits at age 40. Did you see that?
Not as I see it. The same story was on NPR and CNN with doom-like headlines saying, you know, new research shows it's over at age 45. Don't even bother.
That's it. Did you laugh hysterically?
The great thing is, if you read like the NPR story, they led with an even more negative headline. If you actually read the story, they talked to one or two people who said, you know, including the researchers, by the way, who said, of course, this makes it that much more important that you do the things that you can do to help strengthen your mind.
Right.
So that, you know,
They never said that.
No, that wasn't on. That's not on the soundbite. It's not on the headline. It's not the impression anybody gets, and it goes to serve the same collusion and commiseration, which means to be miserable together. Of the negative mindset that, Dave Barry is one of my favorite humor writers.
Uh-huh.
Here's this is an excerpt from Brain Power. Dave Barry says, the advertising industry, and this is a quote from Dave Barry, goes out of its way to make aging appear to be as attractive as a process as death by maggot. Is that great?
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. That is just amazing.
One of the things we aim to do in the book was just going through, you know, starting with Michelangelo, who you mentioned earlier, through to people who are still alive today, one of whom actually is coming over to my house for dinner tonight, Nobel Prize winner, Murray Gell-Mann, 82 years old, won the Nobel Prize in Physics in 1969.
Oh, that's wonderful.
He's coming.
You're going to have a very stimulating conversation and a wonderful dinner.
You bet we are, and we're going to drink some great wines. And Murray's one of the absolute sharpest people I've ever met. I mean, he's a real certified genius. Changed the world. Our understanding of the nature of matter. Totally curious, open-minded, razor sharp. And so I'm, you know, if you surround yourself with people and with examples, even if you can't meet the people, you know, I'm lucky enough to be able to know this particular genius and be able to entertain him at my home. But even if you don't get to know these people personally, you can study the lives of these people who, you know, in their 70s, 80s, 90s, absolutely sharp, passionate about life. And if you surround yourself with that kind of image, we tell the story of a lot of those people in the book. Then all of a sudden, you start to shift out of this negative mindset. The other thing you have to do, you have to be really careful, is watch your language so that you're not colluding. You know, we have our list in the book of the I call them the top 10 self-limiting phrases, the way people hypnotize themselves into a negative approach to getting older.
Yes.
And this, why is this important? Because, you know, and it's not just magic. It's not just magical thinking. Gee, if you think magic, nice positive thoughts, you know, New Age angels will come and bless you with happy longevity dust. You know, you're affecting your immune system moment to moment by the way you think.
Yeah.
So if thinking positively about getting older is strengthening your immune system, and thinking negatively about getting older is weakening your immune system, you don't have to be a Nobel Prize winner to figure out that it's probably a good idea to cultivate a positive attitude.
Right. That is so true. Oh, here they are. Can I read them?
Oh, sure.
Top 10 self-limiting phrases. I'm having a senior moment. That is so, so common. It's laughable. I'm not what I used to be. I'm too old. And how many times have you heard that one? I can't remember anything anymore. My memory is going. Getting older stinks. What is the classic one where they say getting older isn't for sissies. That was an Irma Brombeck saying. Everything was easier when I was younger. I'm over the hill. My best days are behind me, and things keep getting worse as I get older. And my gosh, you know, that is a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, you know, if you want to die sooner and with less creativity and fulfillment, just practice the opposite of everything that's in the book.
That's right. That's right. And my gosh, one of the things is laughing. We've been laughing a lot on this show, and I just think laughter is so, you've cited that as one of the most important things that people can do. When you get together with your friend tonight, with your family, you'll be laughing quite a bit. It's the most important thing. It's just hysterical. You have to.
It's something that strengthens your immune system. And you know, what's really great about laughter, some of the more recent research, is that not only does it improve your own mood and your own optimism when you laugh,
mm-hmm.
it does so for the people around you.
Right. Right. You had mentioned animals as being very helpful to, in fact, there was even a statement that having an animal, whether it be a dog, cat, or whatever, it might even be more important than exercise, but I would assume that you need to exercise and eat well and drink a lot of water and all the things that you cite in your book. But I was interested, you know, we get so close to our animals and the immune system is just, you learn how to love unconditionally. You learn how to live in the moment, how to slow down. You exercise your dog quite a bit. But when they decide to pass on, people become totally devastated. And I'm just wondering if that total devastation interferes with all the great things that have happened over the years with this animal. And it's all crushed, you know, at the end when they decide to pass on.
It's funny to actually say that because that raises, I think that's a very insightful point, is that, yes, having an animal companion, a pet, is something that can give you the same benefit as, you know, all these studies are showing that people who have three or more friends, close social interactions on a regular basis, are less likely to get dementia.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's some people just introverted and there's a line from Seinfeld, which I love. I think Elaine says, people. And Jerry says, they're the worst. So if you're not crazy about people, but you want to get the benefits of that loving social interaction, you can get the same benefits by caring for a dog or a cat, even your plants.
Your plants,
It's about the life, the interaction, the love, and the exchange of energy. And I think resilience is this is where optimism and all these and humor, this is where it really is important. Anybody can be optimistic and humorous when you're healthy, your pet's healthy, everything's good, your health is fine. But it really counts. The reason we have to cultivate this and make it a daily practice is that we need it when it's not so easy to access. We need it. And, I needed it the last 2 months when I was in extreme pain getting this knee replacement. It's easy to fall into a negative, depressed pattern when you can't walk and you're in agony.
I didn't.
I actually really coached myself to be resilient. And it's the same thing. I had an Akita for 11 years, unbelievably beautiful, fabulous animal. And it was, his body had become riddled with cancers that were unoperable, and he was in severe pain. And dogs are very, very good at not showing you that they're in pain. Talked about stoicism, but I talked it over and realized that it was time, that it was the only merciful path was to help ease him out of his body. And so we're in the at the vet's office, and I lifted him up and put him on the table, and I was holding his head and looking at his eyes at the moment when his physical existence came to an end. And I still feel emotional about it and sad about it many years later. But at the same time, there's a depth of soulfulness and a sense of connection and beauty and loving transition that I also still hold and bless that amazing spirit that graced my life. Of course, it's much, that's conscious and it's chosen. What happens if it's sudden, if it's, your dog gets run over? I mean, tragedies happen in our lives.
Sure, they do, and that is part of life. I know. I wish we could, I think that we need to foster a more healthy attitude about when these things happen, because life or death is just, of course, there is no death anyway, but death is very hard to, our separation from the ones we love is so difficult. So I need to figure that out. That's because the reason I even bring it up about the animals, my dog Ulysses almost died of cancer 1 year ago. And I worked on, bringing him out with a lot of healing and prayer, but also with great vitamins and minerals. And finally, the cancer was able to be operated on, and my vet, who is a saint in my opinion, he did the operation, and I was there the whole time because I figured if the dog died on the operating table that I would be right there, with him.
Sure.
But he survived, and he had a great year, but over the last week he went down, and we thought, well, I was not about to give in, but everybody really thought he had a reoccurrence of the cancer, and who wouldn't think that? But this morning I decided, I made an appointment with a holistic vet who is just a brilliant person, and I knew I would one day have to take Ulysses to her. So today was the day, but I noticed that his urine was pretty awful. I took a sample out to her, and he looked like death warmed over in the car. I mean, he looked horrible. He's listening to the story now because he barely got into the office, and she did all kinds of palpation for tumors. to tumors that you would usually find in a golden retriever. And because he's a golden retriever, she went deep palpation everywhere and every which way. But the urine revealed a really bad urinary tract infection. And there's certain things, if he would have had a recurrence of the cancer, she would have been able to see indications of that under the microscope. And none of that was there. He has a horrible, and so she gave me some Chinese herbs and an antibiotic. And he hasn't eaten 3.5 days or so. And I gave him some stimulating herbs, Chinese herbs, to stimulate his blood and so forth, but another one to settle his stomach. And then I got some organic chicken livers and such and boiled that up, brought it out to him, and he lapped it right up like a, I mean, he gobbled it up. And then I could give him his antibiotic because I didn't want to give him his antibiotic before he ate. This is a miracle because, you know, you hear such terrible stories about dogs just dying of cancer. And so as I was leaving the office, and the story you just told about your Akita is one of them, you know, it just tears you apart. As I was leaving the office, that said to me, well, this dog is the best cancer patient I have ever met.
Well, you know, it's you know, I think we have similar veterinary resources because I have two fabulous, gorgeous Akitas, and we have not one but two holistic vets, and we cross reference between them, and they, you know, if their auras are slightly off, they get the right homeopathic remedy or pranic healing. So these dogs are they're actually curled up and just looking at me while I'm talking to you, and they're saying like, yeah, you know, we are pretty lucky, and
we are pretty cool. We're very cool, yeah. Well, this woman
I think you bring up a really powerful context for our whole conversation, which is part of why there is so much negativity as we think about aging, is because our culture is not comfortable with the notion of death. So.
Yes, they're not.
So the reason people make fun of it, the reason you're considered over the hill and past it and so on and so forth, is people are in denial about the fact that we're all going to pass from our current state of manifestation, and they're very attached to that. it's part of why, you know, there's another little dose of humor. I don't know if you got to this, but on page 180 and page 181, I was trying to figure out what's the best way to bring this book to a close, and I thought, what better way to finish than with my top 10 favorite last words from history?
Yes.
Like the last thing, because to me, great last words are just indicative of the you know, positive attitude and a philosophical attitude or a humorous attitude. You know, like Renoir's last words. As he was dying, he painted a picture of a flower, and his last words were, "I think I'm beginning to learn something about art."
Oh, my gosh, I love this one. Humphrey Bogart, "I should never have switched from scotch to martinis."
Isn't that great? Oscar Wilde said, he was sipping champagne on his deathbed, and he said, "Either that wallpaper goes or I do."
The wit
is just, and maybe my favorite one is this Dominique Bonheur, who is this French Jesuit grammarian, right? So his last words, obviously they were in French, we translated it to English, his last words were, "I am about to, or I am going to, die. Either expression is correct."
Wow.
You know what that suggests is the passion for learning and for the areas of interest that one loves. You know, Murray, who's, you know, coming over tonight, besides, you know, winning the Nobel Prize for physics, he's a world-class linguist. Mm-hmm. He is a naturalist. So I don't know, you know, tonight we might talk about birds, we might talk about butterflies, we might talk about the derivations of some of the words that we use. We might talk about current events. I'm sure we'll talk about wine and food for at least part of the evening. But his passionate interest in these subjects, I mean, that's the fountain of youth. It is the love of learning.
Yes, it is. And we need to, you know, to embrace all of it, no matter what it is. Because when you think about, you know, just when the tragedy occurs, there's just so many miracles that do occur in those times. You know, the closeness, the intimacy, the honesty, just the fact that people, that everything slows down and you're able to get to the heart of what really matters in life. And then if you're privileged enough to sit around the deathbed of anybody close to you, or as a nurse, I've done that with babies who have died. Because, you know, I'm a labor and delivery nurse, and babies who die and the families. And I'll never forget, one of the women told me that even though losing her child, who lived several hours, was seemingly the worst thing that could ever happen to her, she felt that she would never want to replace that experience, because she felt like she touched the heart of God. You know, she felt connected in a way to the spiritual or to the divine that she could never have gotten had this experience not occurred. Wow, I thought she was just an amazing woman.
That's wisdom. And, you know, see,
yes.
You can't, I mean, metaphysically, some people believe mm-hmm. that everything is orchestrated for our highest evolution and growth. I won't go that far. That might be true. That might be
true.
But leaving that aside, mm-hmm. I just think it's the most adaptive way to live is to act as if that's true.
Yes.
As if that's true, because in that way, you are effectively creating the experience of your life and getting the most out of whatever happens to you. If you act as if it is meant for your ultimate growth and evolution, well, you're going to experience more growth and evolution. It just, you know,
it happens that way.
Prophecy. Yeah, it just happens that way. So.
Well, I know that the spiritualists of our time and, you know, long ago have always said that everything happens for a higher reason. Everything happens for a reason. And of course, you don't want to say that at certain times. I mean, certainly when somebody loses a child, to say, well, everything happens for a reason, that's just the most inappropriate thing you can say.
But couldn't agree more.
But to live. But to
this
live.
This should be like the book of New Age faux pas. Never say this. Don't restrain yourself. Stifle yourself, as Archie Bunker used to say to Edith in the most politically incorrect fashion. Stifle yourself.
Yeah.
Don't say it. Hold it
don't
back.
Don't say it. Miss. Don't say it. Get out the duct tape. Oh, my
silence
God.
Is golden.
So I have also read some research about how the frontal lobe, and I haven't read it in your book, but I was wondering if you had heard about this, how the frontal lobe actually gets into a sync kind of state and actually grows when the more that you meditate and pray. There's
there is significant research that we refer to in the book about the specific benefits of meditation, and they are not just you know, general feelings of well-being. There are specific measurable brain benefits of a regular meditation practice. and it turns out that it is one of the simple, very best things you can do to improve your mind as you age, is to have some sort of regular relaxation or meditation and or prayer practice.
Mm-hmm.
And to right. help people with mm-hmm. that, you know, that's why our book has this free download of a BrainSync audio program. My co-author Kelly Howell is the founder of BrainSync and one of the pioneers in binaural beat technology, where we can entrain our brain waves into the deeper states that are really the same. They're indistinguishable For example, mm-hmm. the meditation track that comes with our book, if you listen to that program for 10, 20 minutes,
mm-hmm.
Your brain waves are going to be indistinguishable from those of an advanced meditator. Because, we know people need all the help they can get. I mean,
that's right.
Let's say you have trouble sitting down and meditating. You download this brain sync program. You put on the headphones, sit upright, and you get meditated.
Yeah, I have not actually done that yet. I fully intend to, though, because brain sync has quite the reputation. And I really am looking forward to using it.
You'll love it. I mean, all I can tell you is part of why, Kelly and I did this project together is she's a friend of mine. She lives here in Santa Fe.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it was when I had my hip surgery.
Mm-hmm.
I was having trouble sleeping. So I started listening to the brainwave, to the brain sync Delta brainwave programs, and it just made it that much easier to sleep. I mean, it wasn't, it's not snake oil. It's not like, oh, you'll magically sleep perfectly forever. No, but
right.
It just took the edge off, when you're lying there in the middle of the night and your mind is racing and you're kind of in pain and you can't get comfortable. Put on these headphones, and after, 10, 15, 20 minutes, it doesn't hurt as much and not as antsy. And then eventually I'm asleep. So I became a believer and a practitioner of these brain sync programs. And then we realized that what a great way to add value to a book about improving your mind as you age, to give people free downloads of these programs. So, yeah,
that's wonderful. Yes, I agree that is a beautiful gift, a beautiful bonus that you have there, and I want to make use of that for sure. Are you familiar with the ARC in Santa Fe, the bookstore?
Sure, yeah.
Well, one of my very close friends, Sheila Odette, is moved, and she does. She comes on my radio show once a month to do astrology and tarot readings. She is moving out to Santa Fe and will be doing regular astrology and tarot readings there at the ARC. And her name is Sheila, and I would like you to look her up when you have a chance. She's leaving Lancaster. It's hard for her. She is doing it, though, and at her age, here we go again, she's 70. But it's very, very beautiful. I want you to tell her how brave she is when you see her. And
well, feel free to give her my email and have her write to me, and I'll be happy to arrange to meet her, and I'll send people her way when she
wonderful.
Gets here.
Wonderful. Yes. Oh, thank you. She is leaving the end of the month, and I think it must feel, a little frightening, but she's doing it, and she will, within a week, feel much better about it. But it's just this having to do it that is...
That's challenging for anybody at any time.
It is at any age at all. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I don't know. Do you remember the famous scale of the stress number that you got from various events? And
yeah.
Divorce was right up there, but moving was one of the top stressors in our lives. And I've done it enough to say, yes, it absolutely is.
Well, then you have the fact that she lost her partner for life to death, and then she's moving. So you have there a double whammy. And then other things of separation from her children when she moves and, that kind of stuff. But it is something that is difficult at any age, and you're right, it doesn't really matter. And the fact that she's so adventurous is going to be helpful to her.
Yes, indeed. Yes. Well, plus Santa Fe is a great place to come if you do what she does. I mean, this is a mecca for people who are into alternative healing and, accessing all sorts of abilities and insights on many different dimensions. So I hope she'll feel right at home.
I think she will too. And Lancaster, Pennsylvania isn't necessarily the best place for what she does. So, yeah, I'm very excited that you are going to look her up. So this is what the life is all about, you know, connection and reaching out to each other at times of transition like that. And I mean, my gosh, it sounds like a wonderful place. A truly beautiful, it's a power vortex, isn't it?
Well, that's what they say. There's something, you know, we're at 7,500 feet, so maybe we're just closer to heaven. The sun is so vivid. The air is unbelievably clear. It's, you know, I'm not here by accident. I could live anywhere. My wife is an opera singer. She had a contract with the Santa Fe Opera 6 years ago. And we decided after spending the summer here that we would move here. And you know, part of why it's interesting, because one of the principles that people read about in the Brain Power book is the importance of surrounding yourself every day with beauty.
Beauty, yes.
And you know, we both realized that this place, can you still hear me?
I certainly can.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'm just switching phones because I'm running out of power on the other phone.
Okay, go ahead.
There we go. That this place was so exquisitely beautiful that we both felt that, since we both do a lot of, you know, very creative work and we both travel a lot, that this was just a much better place than anywhere else we'd ever been to really get recharged. And to, you know, we both, I'll tell you what we said to each other, you know, if we're based in Santa Fe, if we live here, we're going to live 10 years longer.
Yes. That's a self-fulfilling prophecy. We have a caller on the line. Let me just bring her on.
Sure.
Hello there. Is this Samantha?
Hello, Kate. Oh, I'm enjoying the program so much. I can't wait to get the book and try out the Brain Sync. I have been working with Post-it Science, the Insight program.
Ah, yes.
And it's great.
Does that have to do with brain power, as it were?
It does. What it does is it retrains your eye so that you're able to think faster and focus better and remember more. It's really interesting. So I don't want to stay on the phone, but I really wanted to tell you how much I enjoyed the program, and I can't wait to get the book. So thank you very much.
Well,
that's wonderful.
Yes,
bye.
It is. Thank you.
And just so you know, too, on page 57 of Brain Power, there's a nice paragraph which focuses on the specific program that you mentioned, that particular brain fitness program, and it is one of the things we recommend. So you're on the right track, and I think I'm looking forward to you enjoying Brain Power. That's cool. Great.
Well, she definitely will. Oh, my gosh. I think that, well, it shouldn't be difficult to get this as the best-selling book. And wasn't it just released this week?
You know, what happened is it was supposed to come out originally this week, and the New World Library got so excited about it, and they were very quick on the production. So they actually released it a couple weeks ago so that people could get it as Christmas presents. But real release, the publicity is actually kind of now. So it's just dawning.
Well, I think there's a good radio show to promote it. And I will circulate it widely and send it out. I hope it just goes viral, because it's just something that we need to know, that we aren't going to, just die with a shriveled up brain.
Well, just imagine, what would you like your last words to be? And hopefully we come up with something as witty as Oscar Wilde, right?
Yeah.
Or Renoir.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, if people go to my website, to michaelgelb.com, they will not only find a link to order the book, but mm-hmm. there's also lots of free articles and videos that people can enjoy on going into a lot of depth on the subjects we've just touched on, Leonardo da Vinci and creativity and innovation and of course, brain power, improve your mind as you age.
I just have to say quickly that my father's neurologist, my father who had Alzheimer's, told him that as he, because of some X-ray or some MRI or a CAT scan that they did of his brain, that his brain was just going to shrink and he would die of dementia or Alzheimer's. And my father believed him. This man must have been working from the 1950s concept of the brain research, because my father was susceptible to what the doctor told him. And I just feel so sad, especially now in retrospect and then just reading this book, that he wouldn't have had to buy that. You know, that hypnotic statement.
Well, here's what we know, and let's be really clear about it, is once Alzheimer's sets in,
mm-hmm.
I don't yet know of research, although I think it's possible for it to be reversed, I don't yet know of research that supports the fact that it can be reversed once it sets in.
Yes.
But all the research in brain power focuses on, you know, one of the criteria I was looking for things to include is what's proven to prevent it from setting in.
Mm-hmm.
What are the actual things that prevent dementia of any kind? What are the things that you can do? And there's lots and lots of research, and I've tried to pack that into the book. And
yes.
You know, there's a great a quote from our friend Leonardo da Vinci that I put at the opening of the book, in the dedication of the book. Leonardo da Vinci wrote in his notebook 500 years ago, he wrote, "If you are mindful that old age has wisdom for its food, you will so exert yourself in youth that your old age will not lack sustenance."
Absolutely. That's beautiful. And I just want to say that I believe, even though I have no research to back it up, that we can reverse Alzheimer's. Not we, you and I, but...
No, maybe it is you and I. Maybe it is you and I and our conversation today that will inspire our listeners to help make a difference. And very seriously, though, I said this earlier. I want to emphasize it again. This is not just an individual issue. This is a healthcare issue. We have tens of millions of people for whom this is critically important. You know, the good news is if you're 50, if you're 60, and you haven't been doing any of this, you can still change.
That's right.
You can turn it around. And most of what we talk about in the book costs nothing to do.
Right.
So this is, you want to talk saving healthcare, reforming healthcare. It's not about passing laws. It's about changing behavior, being more responsible and thoughtful about how you utilize your own God-given, incredibly beautiful self.
Absolutely, Michael. Wow. It's just beautiful, beautiful vision to end this show with. I hope you have a wonderful dinner and very stimulating and full of laughter and mirth. And it was wonderful to meet you.
Really a treat. I very much enjoyed our conversation. I look forward to more in the future.
Oh, thank you so much. I do too. And I'll be playing Music for Mother and Child by Klaus D. Jensen. And thanks again, Michael. Love to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.